I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
On today's show, we gave it a big, big build-up. And oh my word, did Man United disappoint. Their loss to Chelsea on Sunday means they're now 2 points behind the Blues. Should they just wave goodbye to the title? It kills me to even say that. Elsewhere, Spurs have sacked Ryan Skinner after their poor run of games. So we wonder if they can turn it around or is it too late? And seeing as it's Mother's Day this weekend, we wanted to learn more about being a mum while you're also a professional footballer. So I sat down with West Ham star midfielder Dagny Brynjarsdóttir to find out more. I mean, Rach, we're in slightly unusual locations this week.
I am coming to you from Aston Villa's training ground. I'm in the changing rooms of Aston Villa's training ground. That is my my location today. So an unusual place to do a podcast record, that's for sure.
Have you bumped into any of the players yet? I mean, I suppose you could only say good things about them this week, given where you are.
Of course. I have chatted to a couple of players, but all of that will be revealed at a later date. I can't tell you just yet what it is we're doing.
I love that. Top secret information. All under wraps for a later date. And was that someone banging on the changing room door? Yeah, of course it was.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, yes. They're fighting to get in here, Chloe. They want to be on the pod.
Of course. I mean, everyone does. I mean, we've had, well, we had now Emma Hayes. We've had Rachel Brown-Finnis. We had a cameo from Karen Bardsley a couple of weeks back.
Karen Bardsley.
Yeah, everyone's, everyone wants a piece of us, and rightly so. All right, we've got to talk about, I mean, Chelsea, the Man United game. I feel like Chelsea have landed a bit of a decisive blow in the title race. And Spurs obviously being in a little bit of trouble this weekend, but we'll touch on them a little bit later. I mean, Chelsea picking up the points this weekend, 1-0 against Man United after an absolute cracker of link-up play between Lauren James and Sam Kerr in the 23rd minute. I mean, who else would you put your money on to be absolutely scoring a worldie at a time where it needed to happen? And after a difficult week for them, really, where they're sort of, you know, injuries, there's this sort of winter virus thing going around, obviously off the back of the Conte Cup loss as well. So, I mean, we spoke about this a little bit before, Rach, that they seemed like this was about the weakest Chelsea that we were ever going to see. So were Man United going to capitalise on that? But it really didn't look that way. I mean, what were your thoughts about Man United's performance? Because I was disappointed.
Well, first of all, I would never use the term weak when it comes to Chelsea.
I meant weakened.
Just because of the depth in that squad, you know, but you do have to obviously look at the fact that they do have some long-term injuries. So yeah, it probably was like the best time for Man United to play them. And I think probably one of their better performances against Chelsea, the closest they had come to actually winning a match. And it was quite a close match. I mean, if you look at the statistics, Man United dominated in terms of possession. So a shame they couldn't create more from that. I feel like at the moment, Chelsea are going to be their bogey team for a little while. For, you know, we've seen in the past where Man United has struggled a little bit against those kind of top three, if you want to call them that, which is hard to call them that now because Man United are right up in there. But they started to take points off those other teams. They beat Arsenal, so they were getting that momentum. They were starting to put those demons to bed. And I think Chelsea are maybe the last demon they need to put to bed. I feel like it's Chelsea's league now. Not only have they got above Man United, but they have the game in hand as well. It just really puts their noses in front. So it will be a big, big disappointment for Man United.
I think that's really funny. I almost see sort of Chelsea as being Man United's final boss, like on a PlayStation game or something like that. It's like the final part of the puzzle that you've got to defeat to win the game. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, Chelsea, you know, a slightly weakened side this Sunday. Obviously missing Kankovic, Cuthbert out with Knox, no Harder, Wrighton, Kirby, Svitkova. So yeah, I mean, Emma Hayes was obviously quite excited about the performance. I think she felt that they'd done a really good job. I think maybe she sounded like she might have had some concerns going into the game, but she felt they deserved it. She felt it was a dominant performance. You know, and she also sort of acknowledged also that it wasn't a great week for them in terms of the build up and the prep and the, you know, the weekday fixture as well wasn't great. But yeah, I think for me, I think what I saw lacking in United was the kind of the defence. I think there was a couple of opportunities. I mean, Mary Earps being called into action twice, two amazing saves for her, but really early on in the game, which kind of set the tone for how things were going to go. But yeah, I think that Sam Kerr goal, obviously Lauren James playing in an absolute worldie ball over the top, pinpoint accuracy, but it just seemed to pick apart the Man United defence for probably like the third time in that 25-minute window. And I do think they got a little bit stuck ball watching at times. So I think that sort of felt to me like an area that they still needed to really improve on. But yeah, I mean, obviously speaking to Mark Skinner after the game, I mean, he felt he was furious. There were a couple of maybe dodgy penalty calls in that game. I mean, what were your thoughts on those? Because obviously those would have been game changers had they gone Man United's way.
Yeah, 100%. He has every right to be angry. They were two penalty shouts. For me, they were penalties. And I think they're very, very lucky that they weren't given, because that really could have been a game changer. Because as we've talked about before, a lot of this comes down to mentality, and you get a goal back, you get ahead, you know, it does change the game. So he's rightly frustrated. I can understand that. I would be too. But, you know, you've touched on that Lauren James and Sam Kerr link up. I don't know what's better, the pass or the goal. Both of them were absolutely sublime. So yeah, a game like that needed a goal like that, I think. But I would love to know how you're feeling, because you've been on this Man United train this whole season. This must be pretty gutting for you.
Yeah, I think this would have obviously been pivotal. I think it would have been such a significant moment in Man United's history, obviously beating Chelsea for the first time. And I think going forwards, I think it still says to me there is a little bit of a gap. Whilst it's very easy to get carried away with Man United's form this season, it is still an incredibly tight run. And I think you want someone new to be contending for the WSL title. So I think it's easy to jump on that train. But yeah, there's still those 1-3 percenters there that I think Man United, whilst they've obviously, you know, overcome Arsenal and got that win, Chelsea are still, like you said, those mentality monsters, and they have the experience. It might not have been the prettiest game. They might not have had the possession they wanted. They might not have had the players they wanted to enact their strategy, but they still grind out that result. So yeah, for me, Chelsea, yeah, they're just too bloody strong. Like, even when they're weakened, they're still too bloody strong. So yeah, credit to them, and I think Emma Hayes has every right now to be happy about that result.
I think for them to win a game like that is really important, especially after the Arsenal loss. You know, she spoke about complacency. So to see her team come out in a difficult situation and play like that and win a game like that, you know, the points are one thing, but for them as a team to know that they can do that, that they can turn up even when not everything's going their way, and they can win a big game like that. And I feel like for some teams, in those big moments, they can shy away, or it can be make things more difficult. I feel like for Chelsea, difficult moments make them thrive. They really kind of thrive under that pressure. And obviously, look, that didn't happen in the Conte Cup final. But I feel like within the league, there always seems to be, they know when there's an edge, and they like to be the ones that are being chased. It almost like gives them that extra 1-2%. So I think, you know, for them as a team to be able to win a game like that in the situation they were in is going to be massive for them going forward.
I mean, yeah, they started Sunday a point behind Man United and finished up top of the table. So not a bad weekend for them. Now 2 points clear and bidding for their sixth WSL title. And now they've got the chance to obviously stretch the lead with 5 points to beat 5 points clear by winning their game in hand. I mean, they next face Man City away on the 26th on Women's Football Weekend.
It's huge. And after the Sky Sports coverage of the weekend of the Arsenal-Reading game, they put up the fixtures remaining of the top four and where, you know, the top four, nearly two of the teams have to play three of the top four and two of the teams have to play two of the top four. So there's still a lot to be decided in this title race. And, you know, if Arsenal win their game in hand, that's three teams on 35 points. Like, that's absolutely mad. It could come down to goal difference. And equally, when you look at the bottom of the table, they did the same thing where they put up the bottom four teams and they pretty much all have to play each other. And so the bottom of the table is so, so tight as well. I was actually at the Man City Brighton game and I tell you what, I'm heartbroken for Brighton. I genuinely thought they were going to hold out against Manchester City. I was really impressed with how they came out and how they pressed them. You know, the first kind of 5-10 minutes, I thought, oh God, you know, Man City are going to cut through them. It's inevitable that Bunny Shaw is going to score. And after that first 5-10 minutes, actually after the goal, they really seemed to tighten up. And they had a couple of chances themselves. They had the ball in the back of the net twice, both offside, I think, or one was offside and one was a foul. You know, so they were getting in behind the Man City defence. They were catching them out on the break really well. And they were much more compact and confident on the break. It wasn't this kind of panicky, you know, loft the ball forward or just swing across in and hopefully someone will be there. It was really, really good play. So whatever Amy Merrick's has done in her first week has been really impressive. And they've put out two good performances against Chelsea and Man City. So it's kind of hard to know for this Chelsea-Man City game. You know, Man City weren't at their best, but also Brighton were equally playing quite well. So whether that means that there's a weakness there that Chelsea can exploit, I don't know. But it is a huge game in the title race.
I mean, it's going to be huge in terms of just this sort of the attacking lines. I'm just really interested to see, you know, Lauren James, Sam Kerr, Chloe Kelly, Bunny Shaw, you know, who's going to come out on top here? Because, you know, all four of them have been on absolute cracking form. So
one thing I will say is the fact that Brighton caught Man City on the break a couple of times, and that's what we were seeing from Chelsea with Man United. They were going over the top. That could be the area that Chelsea can exploit. You know, we can see what Lauren James can do with the ball and where she could put it. We can see how Sam Kerr could take it down and finish. So that's something that Man City will need to be really careful of.
Right, well, I mean, we've touched on the battles at the top of the table, but down at the other end, the relegation zone is also a little bit spicy this year. Liverpool picking up the points from Spurs 2-1 this weekend. I mean, again, we saw a little bit of a similar tale with Spurs, obviously going the goal ahead with the goal from Ian, and then obviously losing the lead. And I just, for me, I mean, the Spurs' form, I mean, we've got to talk about it because it's just gone from okay last season, obviously finishing up fifth. I think we were sort of singing Rianne's praises, saying how amazing she'd done with the talent that she had. But yesterday, big news, Rianne Skinner let go. Yeah, I think that to me, that came out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that. I know, obviously, the bad run of form, and you'd be thinking, okay, well, her job's on the line, but I thought that at least let her see out the end of the season. But obviously, I mean, given the consecutive run of losses they've now had, they've not won a game since the 8-0 win against Brighton in October. I mean, Rachel, were you surprised by that? Because I genuinely was, despite their bad form.
I was a bit surprised. I mean, I understand like you say, they've been on a terrible run of form, but I felt like she had the backing of the club and they understood that this was a longer term project. So I am really sad to see Rianne Skinner go. I hope she stays in and around the WSL. I'm a big fan of hers and she's a lovely person. Kind of, she's always come across really well when speaking to her in press conferences and post-match and stuff. Yeah, I think like up until that kind of end of October, things had kind of been going as expected for Spurs. You know, they'd beaten the teams kind of in and around them, lost to Arsenal, lost to Man City. And then after that 8-0 win against Brighton, they had a three-week gap, you know, in the fixtures, and they seemed to just kind of forget how to score. To be fair, between that, you know, when they came back in November and kind of Christmas, you know, they came back to Chelsea, But then to lose to Reading, West Ham and Everton before Christmas, that's kind of the killer blow for me. Because they then tried to take some steps to change that. They brought in some players in the transfer window, some big players. And then they come back, you know, they play Chelsea, they play Man United, they play Man City. You know, and I think in any other season, losing to them wouldn't be such a big deal. But losing to them on the back of four or five losses, suddenly that compounds the issue. So, you know, I feel like they never really got any kind of consistency or foothold in the league. And I feel for you. And I think in this league with 22 games, it's so easy to slip into a losing streak or a run of bad form. And it's hard to get out of it because you could be hit with one of the top four teams a couple of times in that space of when you're struggling. So, I think the other thing that, you know, I don't think they get enough credit. I know I talk about it a lot, but all the injuries they have on that squad. But look, it's often the case that this is how you deal with if there's a big issue around form and results, you sack the manager. So it's risky, but we'll see. I mean, you played for Spurs. You tell me, like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think I was just surprised. I think obviously they've got the game against Leicester tomorrow, and I did think that was potentially going to be maybe the turnaround point. I think that was difficult to say because I hadn't anticipated actually that Leicester would be doing so well at this point in time. I mean, obviously picking up the point with the draw this weekend, they've obviously had a great run of form after the January break or the Christmas break. So yeah, I think for me, I would have given Rian that game and then see how the land lied after that. Because I think that would have been then the sort of the 10th game to sort of really assess where things were going. Obviously having the 9 losses, but that could have been the win that kind of changed their mindset. And I don't think, obviously there's 4 points, I think, between the bottom 4 teams. So it is still very tight. It's not going to take a lot to get yourself out of that. I think 2 wins would potentially mean that you're probably going to be safe. It's hard to say, but probably going to be safe. And given how Leicester are still, struggling for those points, I think it's not a great season for them. But I think sometimes you do have to just ride these seasons out. I was disappointed. I think it's all too easy just to sort of see, we've had a bad run, let's sack the manager. Because you've got to think about the impact that's actually going to have on the club and the players going forwards. You sacking the manager is not going to mean you bring someone else in and all of a sudden you're magically going to transform the rest of the season. Like, you still have the same players, you still have the same setup. You've just got to try and, you know, instill a new strategy or instill a new mentality with them. So I don't think it's going to necessarily feel any different if they'd have just left her for the rest of the season, for me. But yeah, I mean, what do you think they're going to do? Any kind of managers that you feel are going to step in and take the reins on a struggling side?
Well, Vicky Jepson, obviously, is assistant manager and is stepping in at the moment. You could see her be given the full-time job. I don't know. I think it'll all very much depend on how they finish the season. And it's a big risk doing it before the Leicester game, I think. Because, yes, I understand the Leicester game's a must-win and they're on this bad run of form, but thinking something is going to change in 2 days is risky. But, you know, we've seen in the past when teams get rid of their manager, sometimes there's a new manager bounce or kind of a coming together in a very difficult moment, and maybe they're relying a little bit on that. But that is a must-win game. There's no doubt about it. But I also think there's often less pressure on an interim manager as well. So we'll see. I would still be surprised if they go down this season. I'd be really disappointed if they go down this season. But yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, setup wise, you were there when they were kind of, they come into the WSL, and, you know, in terms of the background of it, it always felt like a long-term project, right? It always felt like the club was bought into this long-term project.
Yeah, it was never, I think that was the thing, going from the Championship to the WSL. And I think back when that was sort of being considered, that was the first time that we had the two Championship teams going into the WSL. And I don't think Spurs had really anticipated that we would be taking one of those two spots when we first started that season. I think it came as a bit of a shock to all of us, obviously with Man United doing so well that year. But I think the last couple of years, I think, for Spurs have been very transitional. Obviously, they had the whole Alex Morgan situation. They were training at the Hive. There were loads of issues at the Hive, the facilities. We went through the pandemic in our first year of being a Championship club. We changed over 11 players, I think, that season. Obviously now Spurs bringing in, you know, some of the big dogs with Beth England. But I think it would be absolutely killer. It'd be such a killer and significant blow for a team like Spurs to be dropping back down into the Championship. I mean, How can you justify spending £250,000 on a player who will then be playing at championship level next year? It would just be absolutely madness. But maybe that says a lot about how well the championship is going and the progress that that's making, that you've got £250,000 players then playing in that league. But I like you said, I don't think that's gonna necessarily take place. But I do think, like you said, that the game against Leicester has now become incredibly critical, and I would be worried because Leicester seem to have found their feet a little bit, and they are full of confidence, and they are a jammy side. They continuously avoid relegation just through sort of gut luck and sheer determination. So yeah, this could be one of the tastier fixtures this week. There's some other massive news kicking off this week. We spoke briefly about this last week. Karine Diacre sacks as the head coach of France. French Football Federation said there were irreversible divisions between the players and the hierarchy, which was detrimental to the interests of the national team. After the French Football Federation president Noël Legrès resigned last week, the exec committee commissioned a report by the interim president Philippe Diallo into the situation of the women's team. A statement after Diacre's dismissal states they had high objectives for the team at this year's World Cup and the Olympics next year. I mean, to me, this is obviously quite an unsettling time for the French team. I think, you know, it looked like even out in the aftermath of the issues that the players have been speaking about, Katoto, Reynard saying we're not happy with how things are going, we're going to take a step away from the team. Diacre continued to say, I'm still going to stay. I'm sorry. I'm not going anywhere. And now, you know, the power of the players, the athlete platform, prevails in this respect. But Rach, you've obviously heard a lot more about this, being on all those secret WhatsApp groups that you talk about. I mean, what are your thoughts on her leaving? How unsettling it's going to be for the team coming up to the World Cup this year?
I mean, it's without doubt going to be unsettling. It's about time. I think she went. You know, I just think with that much disruption in a squad, it's not good for the squad. And results-wise, you're not getting the best out of what is, you know, a generational squad. I mean, it is slightly concerning that the Federation did say the way the players used, like, did what they did to express their criticisms was no longer acceptable in the future. Like, it almost feels like the French Football Federation did what they did, like, reluctantly, which isn't ideal. You want your federation to fully back you, and the issues that they raised were legitimate problems. How much will change? I don't know. Diani, I think it was, came out on TV and spoke about some of the issues, not just with Diacre, although I'd say a lot of those issues are because of Diacre, in terms of, you know, the lack of staff. It was a very, very small staff. They had no kind of assistant coaches for specific areas. Like she said, there was no striking coach, for example. They'd have to be really injured if they wanted any kind of physio attention. So it didn't sound like the strength and conditioning physio side of things was brilliant either. So perhaps now with her leaving, there will be a completely different backroom set up, which would be good. How much impact they can have in such a short space of time, I don't know. We don't have a lot of international windows left. But equally, you might see a team that will play with a bit more freedom because they don't have that weight in their shoulders. You know, I think it was Ollandine already spoke after the 2019 World Cup about how players would be crying in their room. So that's kind of one thing I'm hoping the players don't have to think about now going into this World Cup. And hopefully we'll see players come back with the changes that have been made because they're key players for the French team. And you want a player like Wendy Renard to be at a World Cup. She probably doesn't have many major tournaments left. So how much will change, we will see, but I'm hoping for the best.
Well, from an England perspective, do we want to see Wendy Renard come back? Obviously, we want her to for the competitive advantage that we want it to be a competitive tournament, but she is obviously one of the killer threats there. Talking of, you know, players using their platform and inspiring social change, I mean, another big week for the Lionesses. I mean, it's not enough for them really to be, you know, smashing out Arnold Clark Cups and Women's Euro tournaments, but also using their platform to obviously encourage a slightly slow government to act in the face of providing better equality for girls and boys at PE, in PE at primary and secondary school level. After our episode last week, the UK government announced that the schools must offer girls equal access to football And that's obviously cemented the legacy of the Lionesses and the incredible things they achieved last summer. Leah Williamson and Lotta Wubenmoy led the squad in co-signing a letter to the government asking for equal access to sport in schools. 67% of all UK schools and just 41% of secondary schools currently offer football equally to girls. I mean, the new legislation coming in will make it very clear to schools that they should offer a minimum of 2 hours of PE and must ensure girls have equal access to all sport. I mean, we're sort of a similar age range. I mean, growing up, we were always told that, you know, as soon as PE came on, it was, you know, girls would go off and do netball and rounders. Boys would go off and do football and rugby and cricket. I mean, how do you think this is going to impact things? I mean, how do you think things are going to change? Because for me, you know, mentally, I used to really struggle with the concept that, you know, the boys would go outside and do the sort of what was seen then as the more masculine sports. And I would be told that actually I've got to play with a softball inside or do netball.
I think this is what legacy looks like, right? This is what, when we talk about teams leaving a mark or leaving a legacy, this is what we're talking about, that kind of wider societal impact. And, you know, you can nail down and say, oh, well, is this really going to make a difference? Like, you've got people saying, well, my school already does that. It's not going to change anything. It's not about that. It's not about literally creating the next Lioness. It's about creating opportunity and equality. And it's that wider impact in a school, right? You're not going to have a kid go into a school now and be told, you can't do this because you're a girl, or you don't have access to that because you're not a boy, right? That kind of idea of gendering sport is wild, in my opinion. How we kind of create those structures at such a young age for no real reason that I could think of. So that kind of wider impact that it will have, not just on girls having access to same access to play football or the same opportunities or more access to after school activities, but it's that wider context of making sport a more equal playing field and making those opportunities more equal. So I think that will be the big change. But we also have to think about, you know, accountability, ensuring these things are being checked and being followed and being adhered to. You know, we all know what this government is like. And obviously you have to be careful what you say about the government just in case you get pulled off air. But no, I do think it is, of course, a positive thing for this government to be seen to be doing. So we need to make sure that that's being they're being held to account and that this access is being given. But just that kind of, it's a step, isn't it? Right, progress doesn't happen overnight. And I know I've seen people say, like, what's this really going to change? What's this really going to do? I haven't seen any change yet. It's slow, right? Things don't happen overnight. And we need to be having these conversations and making these things public in order to push progress and to see things change. So this is a really, really big step in the right direction. And it's just about how we follow that up and how we keep pushing.
Yeah, massively. I think you know, there were some statistics, I think, and I know I'm, you know, always a big fan of the billion percent statistic, but I think it was actually about 3.8 million girls and women were now more involved in football than they were 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that in itself, I think, speaks, you know, for what the Lionesses have done and the kind of, and also, you know, the media outlets as well, like, you know, platforms like yourself, Sky, Barclays, the FA Player. All sort of raising awareness of the game and encouraging more girls to participate. And I don't just mean girls from, you know, the younger girls, the younger generation, but we're seeing massive increased participation from the older generation, the generation who, you know, saw parts of the FA ban, the generation who were told that, you know, they shouldn't be playing sport at all, or the generation that's now being told that the only exercise they should be doing are like Zumba classes and things. Like, I'm seeing, as a coach, a lot more kind of the older generation, sort of 50, 60. We had someone who was 70, wants to try goalkeeping for the first time. And I think that's magic as well. I mean, yeah, it's that kind of the generation you kind of missed out on this kind of beautiful wave of increased attention and increased investment into the women's game. So, yeah, for me, I'm really excited about it. And I think more than anything, I think it just also goes to show the power of, you know, incredible you know, role models, especially female role models, and in achieving this kind of you know, societal change.
Let's keep working.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Now, it's Mother's Day this Sunday, and the topic of motherhood is never far away in women's football news. Just this week, Chelsea boss Emma Hayes said that more support needs to be given to players who have children after Melanie Leupolz made her first start of the season following her pregnancy.
So, to get a better understanding of what it takes to balance being a professional footballer and a mother, I caught up with West Ham and Iceland midfielder Dagny Brynjarsdóttir last week, who became a mum at 26 when she was playing for the Portland Thorns. I first asked her about how and when she realised that she was pregnant, which came on international duty for Iceland.
We had just won Germany away 3-2 in the qualification, and then we went to Czech Republic, and I just felt like I couldn't recover after the game. Obviously, the game against Germany was very hard. We travelled over to Czech Republic, and yeah, I was very tired in that game, and afterwards, I went to Iceland for a few days and then on a holiday to Tenerife, where I figured I was pregnant. But it was a big shock to me, to be honest. Obviously, I was just 26. I was very young. But yeah, it was in 2017. And earlier that year, I was dealing with back injury. It was like, I didn't know that year it was going to be able to play in the Euros. But I got healthy like 6 weeks before, so I was able to play in the Euros that year. So I think when I got pregnant, it was just a big shock. It wasn't planned, and I think I wasn't ready to sit out from the game for so long again. And to be honest, I cried every single day, many times a day for the first 22 weeks. I think I struggled just like how my body was changing, and I was very sick through my pregnancy. Was throwing up almost from the day I figured I was pregnant until my son was born. But the reason why I stopped crying and I kind of realized it was a blessing was when I did the 20-week scan. I didn't do the 20-week scan until I was on week 22 because I was traveling in the US at the time. And when I saw a midwife in a small hospital in Selfoss where I lived at the time, and the scan went well, and then I went home and she called me the day after and called me in the morning and said she had booked me another appointment with two midwives in Reykjavik in the main hospital. And normally when you do a scan like that, you're only with one midwife. And I wasn't stressing too much. That's kind of how I was in my pregnancy I know it was because I wasn't happy about being pregnant. I was just like, I remember how I responded. I was just like, oh, I mean, she's like, yeah, I have an appointment for you at 3 p.m. today in Reykjavik. Like, and I was like, oh, I actually can't make it. And she was like, I think you should go. And I said, yeah, I can't go till Friday. And it was Tuesday. And I was like, can you reschedule for me? She was like, okay, I'll just give you their phone number and you will reschedule. But you have the appointment 3 p.m. today, but you have to choose what to do. So I hung up and called my husband, tell him like, oh, I got this strange thing where they're saying she want me to see the midwives again. And my husband, he got mad. He was like, are you stupid? We're going there right now. And I was like, oh, calm down. So what the midwife said, she said to me, she saw something wrong. I didn't know if I had a boy or a girl at the time, but she said she saw something wrong with my baby's eyes. But she still said, oh, it's not something like your baby still has eyes, but it is a bit different. And I guess after my husband got a bit mad to me that I realized like how much of a blessing it was and how much of a blessing it was to have a healthy kid. So my husband came from work straight away and we drove to Reykjavik. It was like 45 minutes away where two midwives waited for us. We got in right away. So I was kind of like, oh my God, that's a big deal. Something might be wrong. And I remember crying in the car and I was saying like, if my baby will be healthy, I promise to never cry again. That I'm pregnant. I was like, I promise I will not cry if my baby is healthy. And then we got in there. I saw the two midwives and I think was in there for 10 seconds where they said like, no, your baby is 100% healthy. Nothing is wrong. I promised to my husband I wouldn't cry again. I actually cried once after this and he said, remember what you promised? And I said, okay, I won't cry again. But yeah, I really struggled through the pregnancy because I just thought about football. And what was strange, all of a sudden when I had my son in my arms, I actually felt like I didn't want to play again. And the only reason kind of why I came back was because I had goals that I had not finished when I got pregnant. I remember it was in April, just before my son turned 2, where I started like really enjoying playing football again and not feeling like I had to rush back home all the time.
Just taking you back there to the pregnancy, I just wanted to get an idea from you about the sort of physical symptoms you're experiencing and, you know, how that affected your training schedule at the time and whether you sort of had any, you know, concerns or fears at all about, you know, the level of exercise that you were doing whilst pregnant. Was that sort of playing on your mind at that point?
No, so after I knew I was pregnant, I just figured out like 2 weeks after my last game that year. So I wasn't playing, but I was training with a men's team in Iceland until on week 13. But the coach knew, I told him I was pregnant. He's a good friend of mine. And so after week 13, he kicked me out. He said, you can't be here anymore. He was thinking about myself, so, and he knew I wasn't capable of thinking and protecting myself because he knew I was just thinking about football. And I actually did my last full session with the women's team on, I think it was week 30th or 31. I could barely walk for 2 days. but the thing also, like with my back injury I had 2017, I had been healthy and not feeling any back pain for maybe 8 weeks, but as soon as I was pregnant, before I knew I was pregnant, some of the pain came back because it was coming from a ligament in my back. So obviously, and with the hormones coming in, the ligaments get a bit looser. So, and I think while, like, I think I was a bit stupid how I trained when I was pregnant. I probably sometimes did a bit too much. And I think actually with the sickness I was dealing with, if I threw up in the morning and if I was able to maybe like get something in my belly and then go out to the gym, I was able to finish the session and feel better afterwards. But if I wasn't able to leave my house, I was probably like, I was normally just laying on the couch throwing up all day. So I actually think going like and being active helped me a bit with the sickness, or helped me a lot actually. And I guess just also like with feeling like an athlete, you know, because I still wanted to be the athlete, and you kind of I felt like I was a bit lost because I didn't plan my pregnancy, and all of a sudden, like, I was the professional player, I was the national team player, but all of a sudden I'm just Dagny when I'm pregnant. I don't know what to do, you know?
I was gonna say, was there any sort of, I mean, before you had your son, did you have any teammates who had sort of gone through the pregnancy process whilst being a full-time professional athlete? Was there any kind of advice that they were able to give you? And what advice would you sort of give your teammates now if they were going through a similar thing?
So we've had Icelandic players who had kids, but we have a semi-professional league in Iceland. So most of them who had their kids stayed in Iceland. But we had one of my best friends, she's actually had two kids while she played in Sweden. Her husband was the assistant coach. So, I mean, I spoke to her a bit, and I spoke to the other girls who had played in Iceland after they had the kids, just to get a bit advice. But I actually looked up a lot to, I started following Sydney LaRue on Instagram. She had her son 2 years before mine. So she was kind of like, just had gone through everything. I'm playing in one of the best leagues in the world. So I actually was just like following her and what she posted on social media. And I think that was helpful. I still follow her. I don't know her, but I still follow her just to like, I mean, she has two kids and is still playing at the highest level. I think it's amazing. And I think, yeah, to be honest, like when I had my son, I had him in Iceland and then I went and play the year after or 6 months later for Portland. But it is hard playing in another country, being so far away from everyone. And I actually, even though Portland gave me a great support, it was very hard. So that's why we came back in 2020 in Iceland. And it just happened that that was the COVID year. So a lot of the league got cancelled, but I was able to play in a semi-pro league in Iceland. But at the time, we had to take that time to figure like how we were going to do it, because it's hard.
And you mentioned a little bit about the kind of support that Portland Thorns were giving you sort of throughout the pregnancy and afterwards. What kind of support were they able to provide for you?
Yeah, so obviously, so I was out of contract when I figured I was pregnant. I actually had the contract in my hands. It just wasn't signed when I figured I was pregnant. And I didn't have it in me to sign before. So I was just honest to the coach. I probably told Mark Parson, I don't know, I was probably 6-7 weeks pregnant, because I wanted to be honest and I trusted him for the secret, because I wanted to play for them. I just couldn't, you know. So, and I think the whole club, him, I mean, Mark probably almost texted me or called me every week, you know, and they showed me a great support. So, and they were always like, he was kept telling me like, yeah, we'll just wait for you when you're ready to come back. And I went back in February, March 2019, and I was able to take my son on the travels, and I remember I had him for a week myself, where they offered a babysitter in training and during the game for one time, and that was just very helpful, because obviously, it was an 8-hour flight to get home to Iceland, so it wasn't like we're getting people visiting all the time. Yeah, but still, it was hard, because obviously I would fly home or fly to Europe to go with the national team. But then two of them, my husband and my son, they would just be alone in Portland, you know. And I think that was kind of what I thought was very hard, because there is like an unwritten rule on the national team where children can travel after they turn one. So I breastfed my son until he was 11 and a half months old, because I actually missed his 1-year-old birthday because I was with the national team. So I was preparing that I wouldn't be with him in that camp when he turned 1 year old. But it was hard, like, I mean, leaving them in on the other side of the world, you know, and going to Europe. So I think I really struggled to balance being a professional, being a national team player after he turned one. To be honest, I actually thought about quitting the national team, because I really enjoyed playing for Portland, being there, the lifestyle, everything. And I was going back and forth, should I do I need to change clubs, or am I going to retire with the national team? But at the same time, one of my goals were to get 100 caps for my national team, and I was so close. So I was like, I can't be done with the national team now. You know, I was only 27. At the time. So it was a bit too young to retire. So that's why we decided to come home to Iceland, and COVID happened. So it was actually quite nice to be in Iceland. But yeah, so when West Ham came up in January 2021, I think it was just something I couldn't say no to. It worked perfectly. Obviously, England is so close to Iceland. Perfect to be in London. So many flights that fly into the city. And yeah, so since we've been here, we've been very happy.
And how was West Ham helping you with managing motherhood? And how is it sort of now that obviously your son's a little bit older? How are you kind of managing childcare at the moment?
I think West Ham has always shown me a great support. I mean, they let me bring him into training. And sometimes I've actually brought my husband as well, just to like they can come and be around. But sometimes when I've had him by myself, I try to not bring him in too often. You know, it's like
it's a distraction for the squad.
Yeah. It's like it's a distraction. And I think also like sometimes for me when I'm on the pitch, I don't want him be like calling my name or be like he actually think he's a part of the team. So if he wouldn't have anyone taking care of him, he would probably be running in the middle of the session thinking like he's one of us, you know. So sometimes like on Saturdays, like my husband has brought him in, or my husband is playing with him on a different pitch, like while we were training for, obviously that's normally matches minus one. But
you're not getting involved in the set pieces?
No, he stays out of the set pieces. But then, I mean, it happened in January that my husband wasn't in and I had my son by myself for 5 days and I had to bring him in on a Saturday. And then Cons actually brought in his kids, who are like 11 and 13, and they just took care of him. I actually just had to ask around in the facility, be like, oh, has anyone seen my son? And they were like, oh yeah, he's there. So I went on the pitch and he was just inside playing with them the whole time. So it's just like a massive help. And they're like, everyone here is so friendly and like ready to help out. And I think, I think that makes a big difference, because obviously you want your child to feel welcome. And I think, and a big reason why I decided to come to Western was, I mean, my first phone call with them, like, that's where they made it very clear, like, that they will be welcoming, like, because I think clubs have to realize, like, they're not only signing a player, they're signing a family, you know. So, and I think just, like, I haven't had anything to complain about, like, and I really enjoy, like, bringing Brynjar on the pitch afterwards, and his biggest highlights of every game is coming into the changing room afterwards. And I've actually like if you lose, I don't want to bring him in, but actually some of the girls are like, no, go, come and bring him, and like they've almost gone to get him, you know. and now when I've been here for a bit longer, I feel like sometimes it is good to bring him in even though we've lost, just to like make everyone a bit happy, because he's not going to care if we win or lost. He always sees us just like as the best players in the world and like this amazing team, you know. So he's just gonna make everyone smile. He wants to be a goalkeeper like Maka. He actually, when we went out to the park yesterday to play football, there was a school strike and I had an off day. He said, "Mommy, you look like yourself and Kate, but I look like Maka." I was like, okay, nice. I hope you want to look like me though. But yeah, he's all about Maka and he wants to be a goalkeeper. And yeah, but Mac is a good role model as well, and she spoils him when he comes in, so she's one of his favourites.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, it's amazing to hear sort of the support that you get at West Ham and how much he's kind of integrated himself within the squad already. Obviously, I mean, you were touched on there sort of, you know, how a lot of the clubs now are sort of seeing the full-rounded player. It's not just we're getting a player, we're getting a family, we're getting a person here. And yeah, obviously, you know, 2021, finally, we had FIFA enforcing the rules that players are entitled to maternity leave, and then last February, obviously WSL and Championship clubs confirmed that they would pay full wages for the first 14 weeks of maternity leave, and then statutory pay from the season onwards. Obviously, you've had, you know, teammates go through similar situations. Sarah, Gunnar's daughter, was awarded backdated paternity leave pay in a tribunal landmark decision in January. How important do you think sort of decisions like that will be going forwards?
I think it's very important just for the future. And I mean, it is a part of women's sport. Like, we can get pregnant and it shouldn't be a barrier. You know, if you want to start a family, you should be able to. And I think it just gives us a lot of security, because when you get pregnant, you're so worried about telling everyone that you're pregnant, even though it shouldn't be a bad thing, but you're so worried. And then obviously it's not great. You're worried about telling people you're pregnant, but also being worried about the salary, how you're going to live, like all that. So just like having all this now settle, I think it's a massive security in the women's game. And I think now it's starting to be more of a norm having a kid than having a comeback. And I think now, yeah, like girls who like think about starting a family, it's a bit easier now. It's like less worries they have to think about. And I think that's a big thing, because obviously when you get pregnant, it is a positive thing. You should be smiling and like, it's exciting times. I mean, it's the best thing to be a mom. So yeah, you shouldn't have to worry about things, you know.
No, love that. I think, you know, obviously yourself having lived the reality of, you know, having some of these fears about how that would look in terms of your career and the impact that it would have, and now sort of going through a transitional period where you're seeing these reforms, you know, come in now. But what are your thoughts on what still needs to be done to, you know, improve the situation for footballers and their rights in terms of, you know, maternity leave and how they're treated during pregnancy?
I actually, if I could change one rule all over, I absolutely hate the one-year-old rule that kids can't travel with their moms after they turn one. I think it should always be up to the mom, because I think a lot of the time, it just depends on the moms. I mean, I know moms who have their kids and they're excited to be gone, to have a big like break, you know, while when I'm gone, all I'm thinking about it was Brynjar's doing, how much I would want him with me. But I think it also depends how your kid is. Like, Brynjar has always been a great sleeper, easy to take care of. With age, he's been a bit harder just because he has a lot of energy and no social limits. But but I think, for example, if footballers have kids who don't sleep well or have stomach problems or something, then probably the moms are excited to go to a hotel and have a good night's sleep and stuff. But yeah, I think it should always just be up to the mom if they want to have their kid with them or not, both here in the league or just in leagues when you go to away games or you go with national team. I think it just should always be up to the mom, because the moms are used to having their kids around almost 24/7. So if that's the best thing for them, they should be able to do it. Obviously, the maternity leave is like 14 weeks, and I think that's smart, but I think it could also be maybe a bit longer. So maybe because some women might have to step away from the team a bit earlier, having problems with something. So yeah, I think 14 weeks is not that long, because I mean, maybe after 25 weeks, you won't be able to move. Your pelvis is like, I don't know, like you're struggling with it, and all you can do is bike, you know, or something, you know, or like barely get out of bed. So I think maybe I think to see it going up to like 16, 20 weeks would be good.
No, I think, I mean, you picked up on a really good point there. In fact, that, you know, every woman's pregnancy and maternity is going to be completely different. It's going to be, you know, the symptoms are going to affect you in different ways. You're going to feel and experience different things. So yeah, I think a bit of flexibility in the contracts and the structure would definitely be a good thing. And yeah, Dagny, I just wanted to finally get your thoughts. I mean, if you had one thing to say to women considering pregnancy, especially sort of, you know, playing at elite level as well, what would it be?
I just think go for it. And I think if you want to get pregnant, you should just do it. And there probably going to be a lot of doubt on the way. I mean, I don't even know how many people asked me if I was done with football when I got pregnant. And I'm not going to lie, the comeback is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I doubted myself many times that I was ever going to be the same player as I was before or better. But I mean, it takes a lot of work. But I mean, today I feel better physically. I'm faster, stronger, just better in every way. And I think, yeah, just if women and players have the right mindset and the like a good support system around them, I think it's possible. And And yeah, and I think every pregnancy is different. Just like focus on yourself. It's hard to get advice, training-wise, and during pregnancy from other people because it's so different. But I think everyone just need to find their own way while they're pregnant and when they come back afterwards.
I know, brilliant. Danny, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being so open and honest with your responses as well. That's been it's been lovely to hear about your story and the amazing relationship that you've got with between your son and the team. Yeah, I look forward to coming down to some of the games and seeing him on the sidelines or seeing his own professional career as a goalkeeper explode in the future.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I mean, what a great chat with Dagny. I mean, absolutely hilarious. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing how her son follows his international superstar career as a goalkeeper. Always good to watch the goalkeepers and the up-and-coming talent coming through. But Rach, I mean, where are you off to this weekend? Another busy weekend for you, I'm assuming.
Yes. First, Spurs-Leicester tomorrow. And then we've got double FA Cup on the weekend, so Lewis versus Manchester United, which I'm excited for, and then Aston Villa versus Man City afterwards. What about you? Where are Crystal Palace?
Well, we've got the weekend off, actually, so I can actually tell my mum that I can enjoy Mother's Day with her, which is a delight. I've not been able to do that now for about 21 years. Yeah, but I mean, I'll be following the Lewis game because I do feel like Lewis are going to put up an absolute battle. I've heard there are going to be quite a few hundreds, if not thousands or so fans down there with the drums, down at the Dripping Pan. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to be catching up with that game. But, yeah, we've got our midweek fixture against Birmingham City next week, a midweeker now, because obviously Birmingham progressed in the FA Cup and it's kind of skewed the fixtures a little bit. But, yeah, that'll be the first time we face them. So it'll be a really, really bloody tough battle. But, yeah, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Upfront. And thanks again to Dagny for joining us. If you've enjoyed our chat with her, then lucky you. We've got another interview coming out later this week.
Yes, we do. Given it's the best day of the year this Friday, St. Patrick's Day.
Not biased at all.
I thought it was time. We needed to up the Irishness in this pod. So I will be joined by Birmingham and Ireland defender Louise Quinn. There's a few big things to talk about, like the small matter of Ireland heading to Australia and New Zealand for the World Cup this summer. So no biggie, but that is going to be epic.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best-kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.